We need to keep a momentum going in our area. We've more or less completed the legal equality agenda, and now we move on to the policy equality, social equality stuff.
Israel is an amazing place because it's, on the one hand, it's very tough and closed and oppressed in many ways. But on the other hand, you have this amazing gay scene or gay life.
Is it true that Israeli men don't like to talk about their feelings?
I don't know. I really don't like to talk about it.
It's a crazy place, Israel.
Welcome to the start of the 18th year of This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. U.S. states debate bias and wedlock, a gay Kiwi MP talks politics, and Israelis and Germans walk on water. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Rick Watts.
Which News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending April 2, 2005. The U.S. state of Maine has added sexual orientation and gender identity as categories protected from discrimination in employment, housing, credit, education, and public accommodations under the state's Human Rights Act. Governor John Baldacci signed the bill into law this week, following its final approval by a 5-2 margin in the state Senate. With that vote, the Senate accepted a House language change specifying that the bill did not establish equal marriage rights for same-gender couples. More than 60% of the House approved the bill. Yet it may be premature for supporters to applaud Maine as the 16th U.S. state to protect the civil rights of lesbian gays and the 6th to protect transgenders, because voters there repealed a similar law in 1997. That was one of three statewide ballot measures Maine voters have decided. In 1995, they rejected an initiative to block the addition of any new categories to the civil rights law, but in 2000, they also rejected Equality Maine's initiative to enact civil rights protections for lesbian gays.
The group that led the opposition to lesbian gay interests in those campaigns, the Christian Civic League of Maine, is gearing up now to collect signatures for an initiative to repeal the new civil rights law. The group needs to submit more than 50,000 signatures by late June for the so-called People's Veto measure to appear on November ballots. Should they miss their deadline, the new law will go into effect at the end of June. But a successful petition would delay the law's effect pending the outcome of the public vote. Even in the current legislature, an amendment was proposed to hold a referendum on the civil rights measure, but it was defeated by 63% of the Senate and a scant 2-vote margin in the House.
The next U.S. state to bar sexual orientation discrimination might be Delaware, where the state House last week approved a bill with a 55% majority. Similar measures were passed by the Delaware House in 2001 and 2003, but never reached the Senate floor. While there's no guarantee it will fare any better in the Senate, the current bill has been tailored to meet past Senate objections by its sponsor, Republican Representative William Oberly. For instance, it features a clause affirming the state's ban on same-gender marriages.
Proposed state constitutional amendments to deny marriage to gay and lesbian couples continue to occupy numerous state legislatures across the U.S. In mid-March, 93% of the Tennessee House gave the last legislative green light to one such amendment. Having already passed the state Senate this session and both houses last session, it will go before the voters in November 2006.
This week, the Minnesota House gave 57% approval to a similar measure after a heated 3-hour debate. If the state Senate follows suit, voters will decide on the amendment next year.
Last week, it was more than 3/4 of the Indiana House approving a constitutional amendment against same-gender marriage that the state Senate had already approved. Both houses of the legislature will have to approve it again in 2007 or 2008 for it to reach voters in November 2008.
And in mid-March, the Iowa House gave 55% approval to a similar amendment, but that measure's prospects in the state Senate are dim.
Also in mid-March, another version of a proposed amendment to the U.S. National Constitution to restrict marriage to one man and one woman was introduced in the Congress despite its predecessor's failure last July. This one explicitly denies any state or federal court the jurisdiction to determine if either the national or any state constitution might require the legal incidence of marriage to be conferred on any unmarried couple.
Honduras National Assembly this week unanimously approved a constitutional amendment denying both marriage and adoptions to gay and lesbian couples. The amendment also denies legal recognition to marriages or similar unions they may contract in other countries. But that's not enough for the 180 churches comprising Honduras Evangelical Federation, which vowed to lobby the government to withdraw the official recognition it finally extended to some lesbi-gay civil rights groups a few months ago.
The Association for Civil Rights in Israel this week filed a petition to have two gay male couples' Canadian marriages legally recognized at home. Although the Israeli consul in Toronto approved their marriage certificates, as did the Canadian embassy in Israel and the Canadian foreign ministry, Israel's interior ministry has refused to register their unions. Their brief argues that the religious considerations that prohibit same-gender couples from marrying in Israel cannot be used by the state to deny recognition to foreign marriages.
That action was filed in Jerusalem, where thousands of lesbi-gays are expected to gather for the 10-day World Pride celebration beginning in mid-August. But united Jewish, Christian, and Islamic clerical opposition to the event has been growing since January, when they began to publicly pressure the mayor to deny a permit to the event. Local religious leaders have been encouraged by U.S. radio preacher Leo Giovannetti and a group of U.S. Orthodox rabbis who are circulating a petition claiming that the Pride event will debase the sanctity of Jerusalem. This week, a joint press conference was held in Jerusalem by both the Sephardic and Ashkenazi chief rabbis, three of Jerusalem's senior Muslim clergy, the Vatican's ambassador to Israel, and the patriarchs of the Greek Orthodox and Armenian churches. World media were attracted by that rare agreement among faiths, but World Pride's host Jerusalem Open House's director Haggai Elad called it an attempt to globalize bigotry. That's not exactly what was intended by the World Pride theme of love without borders. There's political opposition as well, with more than 30 members of the Knesset, Israel's parliament, having reportedly agreed to sign the petition to stop the World Pride march. The parade permit decision is up to Jerusalem police, who had suggested in February that they might not have the staff to secure the parade because the withdrawal of Jewish settlers from Gaza is slated to begin just 4 weeks before it. Police protection may be more important than ever before, as many Pride opponents are referring to the march as a provocation, and Jerusalem has already been uneasy with its own three annual Pride parades. But World Pride organizers are determined to go forward, just as they were for the equally controversial and ultimately successful World Pride in Rome in 2000.
India's Supreme Court has taken the first steps in proceeding with a constitutional challenge to the National Sodomy Law, which provides for punishing homosexual acts with up to 10 years imprisonment, declaring that the petition filed by the NAS Foundation will not be dismissed as an academic question. A two-judge panel this week notified both the national and Delhi governments that they have 4 weeks to respond to it. The NAS Foundation is appealing a previous dismissal of its case by the Delhi High Court on the grounds that the organization per se is not directly affected by the law. As part of this week's action, the Supreme Court indicated it might still send the case back to the High Court to be heard. Although part of the NAS Foundation's own mandate is AIDS prevention, some AIDS groups have joined government health bodies in defending the sodomy law as a means of preventing HIV transmission.
An appeal by a Singapore AIDS awareness group has failed, as the Minister for Information this week upheld the Media Development Authority's refusal to license a charity concert by a gay male couple. The group Safe Haven believed the appearance by Los Angeles-based Christian duo Jason and DeMarco would serve as a beneficial model of sexual fidelity. But Minister Lee Boon Yang upheld the MDA's position that performances that promote alternative lifestyles are against the public interest. Safe Haven is now admitting defeat and refunding advance tickets to the event, but also vows to attempt to engage the government through constructive dialogue at every given opportunity.
But Australian Democrats are arguing that a general public health risk is being posed by their nation's refusal to recognize same-gender partnerships. Australia's public medical services have an overall shortage of physicians, particularly in rural areas and in some specialties, including psychiatry. Even in Sydney, the system has been falling short by half of the new psychiatric trainees it needs. Two of those officially designated area of need positions were slated to be filled by doctors from overseas who were lost to the program when immigration refused to issue family visas to their same-gender partners. While unmarried heterosexual partners could have obtained 4-year family residency permits, the same-gender partners could apply only for 12-month visitor visas, which barred them from working in Australia and would require leaving the country to obtain a renewal. This situation also applies to other professional skills, but health officials in the state of New South Wales are joining the Democrats in proclaiming their particular loss to be the result of inappropriate discrimination by the federal government.
And finally, once again, there's a ferry down under. In 2003, New Zealand-based outdoors equipment firm Ferry Down Clothing threw out 75 years of history to change its brand name to Zone. That move was based on market research that found Australian men were put off by the perceived homosexual connotations of Ferry Down. But this week, the company announced it's reverting to the name Mount Everest climber Sir Edmund Hillary made famous. It's also mounting a new ad campaign, a spokesperson said, will make it a lot more comfortable for those who were concerned about having a ferry on their garment. The ads will feature another noted mountain climber in action declaring, "Come here and call me a fairy."
That's News Wrap for the week ending April 2, 2005. Written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Rick Watts.
A star-studded international cast and a multicultural crew make an American-Israeli's latest film as much about the off-screen as the on. We'll have a sip of Walk on Water later in the program. Openly out, New Zealand MP Tim Barnett played an instrumental role in the recent passage of the nation's civil union bill. A former executive director of the UK queer advocacy group Stonewall, Tim brought his activism with him when he emigrated to New Zealand, where he now serves as Labour Party MP for the seat of Christchurch. He's the parliamentary private secretary to the Associate Minister of Justice on Human Rights Issues, the Minister for the Community and Voluntary Sector, and the Minister for Social Development. This Way Out correspondent Uma Kali Shakti recently traveled from her Sydney, Australia home base to visit with Tim in his office at Parliament House in Wellington.
The Civil Union Bill went through in December and it comes into effect on the 26th of April, and people have to give 3 days' notice of a civil union. So effectively, Saturday 30th of April will be the first civil unions. There's a really big one on the 1st of May in Wellington, which is of John and Des, who became the poster boys of the campaign. John is 75, Des is 65, and the media really focused on them during the campaign, and they have been together for 18 years. They are being civil unionised by the mayor of Wellington when she gets registered as a celebrant, and she's the mother of a queer daughter. And then they're going to process through the streets, led by a brass band, to the honeymoon reception. Well, I think one of the successes here has been to actually have a part of the ruling party, the Labour Party, which is dedicated to pursuing rainbow issues and which really works to create policy, to monitor policy, to support the three rainbow MPs we've got at the moment. That's called Rainbow Labour. And over the last 7 years, I guess, it's risen from being just an informal meeting of party members in different parts of the country to formalise branches, to get a sector recognition by the Labour Party centrally, and then through a constitution change 2 years ago to actually get a voting place on Labour's national executive. So we're really recognised when it comes to campaigning and funding and the development of policy. So that, in my view, ensures we will always have rainbow members of our caucus and also a rainbow policy. So it gives a bit of impetus and momentum to the whole area, because I think one of the truths of politics is if the momentum ceases, then people wander off and do other stuff. So we need to keep a momentum going in our area. We've more or less completed the legal equality agenda, and now we move on to the policy equality, social equality stuff. The other thing we've done, which, and I think we're pretty unique in it, is that we have in our Ministry of Social Development a lesbian and gay and transgender bisexual desk. So there's actually an official in that ministry whose job it is to work parallel to the other population ministries like Pacific Island Affairs, Maori Affairs, Women's Affairs, Disability, Senior Citizens and Youth, to actually be the centre of expertise in government on these issues. So if a government department wants to examine the queer angle to something, then they can actually go to that ministry and find out from that official. So we're trying to embed what we're doing in rainbow issues long-term rather than just sort of responding to the latest trend.
That's why I'm really pleased to be a Kiwi.
We've got three of us, and it was fairly unplanned that we have three queer MPs among the 51 Labour Members of Parliament here, but we really express the three different aspects of what I think a rainbow MP's team needs to have. One is somebody in a position of power, and Chris Carter is one of the Auckland Members of Parliament, is a cabinet minister, so he's got the ears of the Prime Minister, which is pretty important. We've got Georgina Beyer, who is a kind of world-famous first transgender member of Parliament, who's a real icon for not just the queer community, but the wider New Zealand community. Plus, she's Māori and then obviously talks to that community. And then thirdly, me with more of a kind of activist political involvement background in Christchurch. So we happen to cover three bits of the country, and we happen to have the activist, the kind of iconic role, I guess, Georgina's got, and then Chris is a great political operator. I think between the three of us, we managed to be a pretty good team, not only to push this agenda forward, but also to sustain the policies once we get them through. And now we're looking at the election this year in September as an opportunity to maybe grow that team a tiny bit. The obvious gap is a lesbian member of parliament, and certainly there's one person who should be high up the Labour Party list this time, Marion Street. She was former party president for Labour, and she's third in the Auckland region in the list process. So it looks pretty hopeful for her that she might end up with a high list position. So we'll see in about a month or so whether that's the case.
And how is it working in a situation where there's so many women in positions of power?
Well, we've had women prime ministers now for the last 8 years, informally from a Conservative prime minister, Jenny Shipley, and then since 1999, Helen Clark for Labour. We've currently got a woman attorney general who is going to become the Speaker of our Parliament, so she'll be the first woman Speaker, having been the first woman Attorney General. The Governor General is a woman, the head of the largest company is a woman, and the Chief Justice is a woman. So we're a pretty feminised country.
Absolutely. Well, of course, we're the first to give the vote to women.
Yes, well, it just follows from that. And I think it does actually help in terms of a queer agenda, because those politicians and other figures are much more readily able to identify with our struggles, because they can compare it to their own position as women. And I think a lot of the Maori MPs actually are supportive of our agenda, because again, they can identify prejudice and discrimination and the role of the law in overcoming that much more easily than many the traditional white male politicians can.
So we might see a great rush of rainbow queer migration across to Aotearoa, because it sounds like a fantastic place to live.
That sounds like a very good idea to me.
So. Oh, that'd be wonderful. Thank you so much for giving us your time and speaking with us today, Tim.
Very happy to do that.
That was Gay New Zealand MP Tim Barnett in conversation with This Way Out correspondent Uma Kali Shakti.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine brought to you by you. Your charitable donations keep this program on the air. We've produced some special CDs to say thank you to our supporters, featuring queer history, reviews of LGBT music, and behind-the-scenes looks at relevant movies and TV shows. You can also now get CDs of our regular program by subscription, and be sure you never miss a week of This Way Out. For all the details, please visit our website at thiswayout.org. You can also demonstrate your solidarity by taking part in an online benefit auction. Look for the This Way Out area at alternabid.com. Again, to find out more about special CD thank you gifts, subscriptions, and the auction, please do log on to thiswayout.org, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA.
In a world of conflict, can a new generation forgive the sins of the past? That's the central question a new joint Israeli-German production brings to the big screen. This Way Out's Steve Pride has some clips from and chats with American-born Israeli director Eitan Fox about Walk on Water.
Only 2 years after Yossi and Jagger, Israeli director Eitan Fox returns to the Cineplex with Walk on Water, the story of an Israeli agent hunting down an ex-Nazi. Going undercover, he finds his prejudices challenged when he meets the man's openly gay grandson.
So they didn't circumcise you? I think I never saw one. You know, we used to talk about it in the army. If it looks bigger and if it's better in bed.
I don't know. It's the only one I ever had.
Is everybody like that in Europe?
In Germany, hardly nobody is circumcised, except for the Turks.
In other countries of Europe, let me think. Italians?
Definitely not circumcised. Also the English and the French, definitely not. Actually, only the Muslims are circumcised in Europe, and the Jews, of course. I think it looks better circumcised.
I see you know quite a lot about it.
Israel is perceived as one of the world's more macho societies, so the rules of queer theory dictate that homophobia ought to be the norm. But it's a young country, and one of many contradictions.
Israel is an amazing place because it's, on the one hand, it's very tough and closed and oppressed in many ways.
Director Eitan Fox.
But on the other hand, you have this amazing gay scene or gay life in Tel Aviv, and you have nightclubs and bars and my movies and other movies and television series that have gay characters in them. And we were first to have these characters before Americans had them even, you know. It's like, and so you say, how could this happen? It's full of contradictions and full of these dichotomies. On the one hand, you're these tough machos, and on the other hand, you're so open-minded and accepting towards gays. It's a crazy place, Israel.
So tell me, does she like living here?
Yes, she loves it.
Does she have a boyfriend?
She had one, but not anymore. A guy she met in India. She says Israeli men are...
What? Impossible?
Yes. I mean, no.
It's okay. She's not the first to think so.
Is it true that Israeli men don't like to talk about their feelings?
I don't know. I really don't like to talk about it.
Growing up in Israel, and I don't know what would be the equivalent in America, you really grew up with these very heavy weights on your shoulder. You know, you have to be a very certain kind of man. You're taught and you're brought up to be a very certain kind of man, a man that will go to the army at 18 and will be a tough warrior. And we're really taught to believe that there's only one kind of man that you can be. Of course, this man is straight. That comes without saying at all, you know. And so that is like these heavy weights that I've been carrying on my shoulders that every young Israeli carries on his shoulders. And I think my generation, younger people, are saying we don't want to live that way anymore. We don't want to be these tough, macho, emotional cripples anymore. We want to be different. That doesn't mean necessarily gay. We don't all want to be homosexual necessarily, but we want to be able to experience things like a lot of gay men or homosexual men experience them. You know, we want to be able to let our hair down, take our clothes off and dance in the center of the city or the town naked, you know, metaphorically speaking, of course, you know. And Israeli men never allow themselves to feel that way or to behave that way. And things are changing in Israel. We have a gay march now in Israel, and many straight men join that march and enjoy it. And so in Hebrew, there's an expression, living on your sword, meaning that you will live forever as a soldier, fighting with your weapon. You know, the people want to lay down their weapons and their, you know, and say, let's just be normal. Let's just live normally and have a good life.
The cast and crew of Walk on Water were drawn from both Germany and Israel, and were a mix of personal sexualities.
It was a fascinating experience, you know, of like Germans and Israelis getting together, gays and straights getting together, you know, and working on this film, like Eyal, who's Leo Ashkenazi, who's the biggest film star in Israel, and Knut Berger, the German actor, who's a relatively young, unknown actor. But Knut is gay and Leo is straight, and they had to deal with each other. And it was so strange because Leo came to me after a month of shooting and said, tell me, is it true that Knut is gay? I said, I can't believe you, Leo. Just like the character in the movie that doesn't really understand that, you know, his friend is gay. And he realized this after everyone else knew, of course. And it was so interesting and funny and strange. He said, but I don't know. You know, he's just like me. He doesn't like all the screeny music that you usually, you know, you guys listen to. And he's into rock and he dresses like me and he talks like me. And what do you want? I said, forget it. You wouldn't understand. You're too straight and too whatever. So it was really a very interesting experience dealing with Germans, dealing with all these different issues.
Can I ask you something personal?
Of course. I've got nothing to hide. Go ahead.
I've always wondered what it was like to grow up in Germany and then suddenly realize what happened in World War II.
Germans and Israelis are really connected and will probably be connected forever with this horrible past that we share. And this has been affecting our lives, Israelis and Germans, ever since. And it's a very
important part of our collective psyche, and it's something that people want to find a way of, I don't know if closing up or finishing or stopping, but they want to find a way of overcoming in some ways, you know, and just going ahead and having it less and less of an issue in our lives.
But after the film was released, the straight heartthrob who stars in Walk on Water made a surprising announcement.
Leo, what he did when the film came out, which was amazing, is he also went on this big television program and told the nation about a sexual relationship, a romantic relationship he had with a man. And he said, this is something that I experienced, and it was wonderful. I finished that relationship and realized that I wanted to be with women. But that was a wonderful experience, and I'm very happy that I had it. So now imagine Tom Cruise doing this, or Brad Pitt doing this. And that was such a wonderful thing for me to see him doing, because I think that was part of our relationship and part of the film that brought him to a place where he said, I want to talk about these things. I want to expose these things.
And what does Eitan Fox want audiences to take away from the film, especially those audiences outside of his homeland?
I'm not thinking of my films as representatives or ambassadors of anything. I'm just trying to tell the stories that I know and deal with characters that I care about. But that's like maybe not taking responsibility for what I know that is happening. These films like Leaving Israel and going all over the world and do represent Israel and do represent me and do represent the gay world of Israel and maybe gays in general. And it's important for me to do this in a way which is meaningful for people. And it's important for me to make people closer and connect between people and to make people understand us and care for us more.
Walk on Water is a Samuel Golden release in the United States, but is soon coming to theaters in Switzerland, Belgium, Australia, and Germany. For more information, point your internet browser to walkonwatermovie.com. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening. You're the lady that I love.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Rick Watts, Graham Underhill, Rex Walkner, Uma Kali Shakti, and Steve Pride contributed program material, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, www.thiswayout.org. And remember, you can email tworadio@aol.com to ask for our emailed monthly This Way Out updates and or to receive our weekly program promo messages. That's tworadio@aol.com. This Way Out is supported by charitable donations from our listeners. We thank you. Please find out how you can help keep this program on the air by visiting our website, www.thiswayout.org. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on CFUV Victoria, British Columbia, WHUS Storrs, Connecticut, KUCR Riverside, California, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we know you'll stay tuned.